Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On a Monday, it's November 17th, 2020. Good morning. Hope your day is going beautifully. It's a Monday, and this is a day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it always and every day. And again, we are moving closer toward Advent, if you can believe it. I was discussing that with our good friend Matt Swain from the Sunrise Morning Show, how quickly the time is going by as we move into a brand new liturgical year very, very soon. And speaking of Matt Swain, he's joining us. He's the first one up after our news and weather. He'll join us about 16 minutes past the hour because it's a Monday, and that means we have the Journey Home program airing this evening. And Matt, of course, is strongly connected with the program, but also the Coming Home Network. And we always enjoy catching up with Matt to find out the latest and greatest guest on this wonderful program, begun by, of course, the amazing Marcus Grody. His son is now the host. But so many incredible stories of people discovering and coming into or coming back into the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. So you have to stay tuned to find out all about the guest or guests for this evening's Journey Home. And of course, Journey Home Highlights occurs every Monday right here on Catholic Connection with Matt Swain. That's coming up in a few minutes. And then you're not going to believe this story, but considering how crazy the culture of death has gotten in the last few years, maybe you will. So I was doing some research on this topic, IVF embryos being made into keepsake jewelry. Talk about the desecration of the human person and the companies behind this so-called jewelry. What they're doing is they're targeting moms who went through IVF and who lost, who had to discard embryos. And instead of just storing them or throwing them away, why not put them into jewelry? So Kimberly Bird, the Senior Specialist for Communications and Affairs at Live Action, an amazing pro-life group, is going to talk to us about this horrific thing that's been going on for quite a few years, actually, and give us an understanding of what this means and how far we've gone down, the rabbit hole in disrespecting the human person. And this, I think, highlights why the church teaches what she teaches about IVF. And some people will say, well, if the church is so pro-life, why aren't they open to IVF? Well, this is one of those examples. This is something that you can't control in terms of how many embryos are developed. What do you do with the extra embryos? Blah, blah, blah. A couple only wants one or two children. There's so much on this. And I would encourage you to go to the Live Action website, but also the website of the National Catholic Bioethics Center with Father Tad Baholchek, who has taught about this for years and works with groups like Live Action to help people understand the reason the church tells us what she tells us about life is you can't be messing with this stuff, because this is what happens. Not to mention, in the area of in vitro, there's so much abuse going on. It is so expensive. It's very painful and damaging for the women. But also, oftentimes, it doesn't work. And it's like the wild, wild west with few regulations. There's been all kinds of horror stories in terms of lawsuits that have been filed. So there's much to discuss with Kimberly Bird. Again, she's a Senior Specialist for Communications and Affairs at Live Action, liveaction.org, and we'll have her for two segments this morning, as there is much to talk about. And then, as we always do, we have Gail Buckley Barringer with our scripture verse of the week. Of course, a great way to get you started every Monday, Bible basic instructions before leaving Earth, as I like to say. Okay, looking at the weather, and let's see what we're going to have. We have an update on the California situation. We'll give you that in the news, but now California, if you can believe it, is facing more rough weather. Another round of heavy rainfall will renew concerns for additional flash flooding and landslides in Southern California around burn scars and coastal mountain ranges. A low pressure system is bringing enhanced snowfall downwind from the lower Great Lakes into the northeast mountain ranges as well. And then there'll be some above average temperatures challenging or breaking daily record high temperatures across the southern plains. So California still has more problems to look at weather-wise, and we'll keep you up to date on those stories. It is a Monday. We're so glad you tuned in to EWTN. Right now, though, we need to check the news and let you know what's happening on a Monday morning. Pope Leo XIV having lunch on Sunday with more than 1,300 people experiencing poverty and social exclusion, gathering with them in the Vatican's Paul VI Hall for a festive meal marking the World Day of the Poor. The hall was transformed into a vast dining room for the occasion. The event organized by the Congregation of the Mission on behalf of the Vincentian missionaries around the world, who this year are celebrating their 400th anniversary of the founding of their congregation, along with the Daughters of Charity. And meanwhile, the Vatican's Apostolic Palace was filled with actors, actresses, filmmakers, and scriptwriters, as Vatican News reports over the weekend. This happened on Saturday morning as the Pope met with members of the world of cinema. Nearly 130 years after the first film premiered in Paris in 1895, the Holy Father highlighting the ongoing importance of film, moving from impressing audiences with visual effects, he says cinema became an expression of a desire to contemplate and understand life, to recount its greatness and fragility, and to portray the longing for infinity. He also affirmed the film industry's cultural and societal value and the importance of safeguarding both. And American actress Leslie Mann choosing to follow the Pope's call to look to the future with a sense of optimism about cinema.
It was incredible. I don't know what he said exactly because he was speaking Italian, but we have it written down in English, so we'll go home and read it. But it was we're very hopeful and very excited for the future of cinema. Yeah, thank you.
Also, I mean, the world of cinema is obviously very important for people's lives.
Yes.
How do you feel as an actress?
We're trying to get people back in theaters and, you know, to experience movies together instead of at home on the lazy boy.
Pope Leo expressing his gratitude also for what cinema represents, a popularity said the noblest sense intended for an accessible narrative into people's spiritual journey. He said, "This is cinema's greatest contribution to humanity. It helps audiences consider their own lives, look at the complexity of their experiences with new eyes, and examine the world as if for the first time." In other news this morning, the FAA is ending a flight reduction emergency order today, now that the government shutdown is over. A reduction in flights at 40 major airports, as you may recall, began last week and meant to address fatigue and staffing issues among air traffic controllers. A decision is to resume operations as normal. It was made following an FAA review of safety trends and due to the steady decline of staffing trigger events in air traffic control facilities, according to a news release. The U.S. attorney for New Jersey, Alina Haba, says she's feeling better after the arrest of the suspect who destroyed property in her office earlier last week.
This individual obviously got very close to where I sit for work every single day. So it was, he got into the building. It was frightening.
She says she's thankful for the FBI, Homeland Security, and all the federal agencies that really stepped up and captured the individual. Keith Michael Lisa is charged with possession of a dangerous weapon in a federal facility and damaging federal property. Investigators say he arrived at the federal building in Newark last Wednesday with a bat. Security did not let him in, but authorities say he came back without the bat and got up to Haba's office. When he couldn't see her, he tore down photos that were on the wall and left. FBI Director Kash Patel says the U.S. has taken a major step with the agreement with China to stop shipping ingredients used to make fentanyl. Speaking on Fox's Sunday Morning Futures, Patel said he expects to see an immediate impact.
We got the agreement solidified, and it's already in place, and we're going to see immediate results and immediate American lives saved.
The agreement came after President Trump cut tariffs on Chinese goods following a meeting with Chinese leaders where they promised to tackle fentanyl trafficking. Anthropic, the AI company behind Claude, says it has uncovered what it believes to be the first ever large-scale cyber attack carried out by AI. Stuart Smith reports a company is blaming the attack on a Chinese state-sponsored group of hackers that use its own tool to infiltrate dozens of global targets.
Anthropic claims in mid-September a hacker group tricked its AI agent into bypassing guardrails by breaking down the hacker's requests into small, seemingly innocent tasks. Ultimately, Claude identified, tested, and exploited vulnerabilities to steal usernames and passwords, extracted large amounts of private data, and categorized it according to intelligence value. They estimate it did all this with minimal human intervention, doing 80 to 90% of the work itself at thousands of times. tasks per second in what Anthropic says would have been impossible just a year ago. Stuart Smith, London.
And federal employees, as you may have been hearing, are returning to work now that the government shutdown is over. The White House reportedly urging federal agencies to send paychecks as quickly as possible to employees who have been without pay.
The Council of Economic Advisers estimates the shutdown cost the U.S. economy about $15 billion a week, causing 60,000 non-federal employees to lose their jobs. States are also scrambling to get SNAP food benefits out to the 42 million Americans who rely on them.
And Gabe Gutierrez reporting, as we mentioned earlier, that airlines are ready to shift back to full operations once they get clearance from the government. Federal immigration agents are conducting a major operation in Charlotte, North Carolina, targeting illegal immigrants. The Department of Homeland Security announcing over the weekend it's launched Operation Charlotte's Web, led by Border Patrol agents. Officials say the crackdown focuses on public safety and removing criminal illegal aliens. The NBA is asking staff members from numerous teams, including the Lakers, to turn in their cell phones. And as Tammy Trujillo says, they're also being asked to turn in other property as part of the gambling probe. The Athletic reports sources from the league have confirmed the move.
It says staffers across the league were contacted after federal prosecutors revealed new details in last month's criminal cases involving alleged illegal betting schemes tied to insider injury information. The NBA has hired an outside law firm to conduct the internal review, which includes requesting documents, phones, and records from select team employees. Investigators are expected to request materials from at least 10 Lakers employees after federal charges were filed against Damon Jones, a former NBA player who worked informally with the team and is an associate of LeBron James. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A new Apple feature allowing users to carry their U.S. passports on their phones. The tech company says digital ID for iPhones and Apple Watches is being rolled out at TSA checkpoints at over 250 airports across the U.S. for use when traveling within the country. It adds, however, that digital ID does not replace a physical passport and cannot be used for international travel or crossing borders. Jim Forbes tells us Senator John Fetterman is back home after spending 3 days in a Pittsburgh hospital for a head injury.
The Pennsylvania Democrat made the announcement on social media Saturday and showed a picture of himself with stitches in his head. Fetterman wrote, quote, 20 stitches later and a full recovery, I'm back home with my wife and kids. A spokesman for Fetterman said the senator fell Thursday while taking a walk outside his home near Pittsburgh, where he had what doctors called, quote, a ventricular fibrillation flare-up, which led him feeling lightheaded and falling to the ground. I'm Jim Forbes.
And Target says it's slashing prices on thousands of food, beverage, and essential items. Heading into the upcoming Thanksgiving and Christmas season, the price reduction started earlier this month and includes such items as Kraft mac and cheese, Gerber Kid snacks, and Pillsbury pie crust. The retailer also saying its Thanksgiving meal for four does cost less than $20 this year. Among the items included in the meal are a Good & Gather premium basted young turkey up to 10 pounds, Ocean Spray jellied cranberry sauce, stovetop stuffing mix, and favorite day soft French bread. I'm getting hungry reading this. Targets and lowering prices will make a difference for families managing tight household budgets during the holidays. It is a Monday morning. We are glad that you are here with us listening to EWTN's Catholic Connection. It is November 17th already, 2025. Wishing you a beautiful day and a beautiful week. When we come back, going to talk about a very important topic, of course, life, because we are your pro-life radio network, right? And TV network, of course. You're not going to believe this story, but then again, given the state of our world, especially the culture of death, maybe you will. IVF embryos, Lord help us, being made into keepsake jewelry. We'll talk about that with Live Action when we come back. Before we get to the topic with IVF, that's coming up at the bottom of the hour, I do want to make sure you know that we have the one, the only Matt Swaim with us, as we do every Monday morning, to talk about the journey home, which airs on Monday evenings on EWTN. Mateo, long time no talk to, just about 2 hours ago, I was on with you on the Sunrise Morning Show. I always look forward to our segments because you always have such unique stories about people coming into or coming back into the church. Good morning again.
Good morning again, Teresa. Yeah, we got a really unique one tonight. So,
okay.
had a young woman who was, you know, raised in San Francisco, kind of in a sort of a secular world, and then decided to take an exchange program to go to Europe, but not just any part of Europe and not just any era, but in the 80s in East Germany, and went to go study at Karl Marx University.
Wow.
So, now, there are people who, you know, are maybe on the younger side and don't remember how crazy that would have been, or don't even remember when there used to be two Germanys. But she was there in the 80s as a young girl. And interestingly enough, she had been studying her whole life, you know, doing educational, you know, betterment to try and get a better job, to go advance. And she felt a lot of pressure, actually, as a woman to, you know, to be as successful as possible and, you know, seize the opportunities that had been given to her. But this atheist professor said something that kind of blew her mind about how the purpose of this course in philosophy is to teach you to find truth. And weirdly enough, she had gone halfway around the world to hear an atheist professor tell her that education was supposed to be about the pursuit of truth. Now, this guy hadn't found it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But what an interesting thing to have God take her halfway around the world to hear something like that out of that kind of a setting.
Yeah, it's so interesting, too, when you even just start to open yourself up, just crack the door open a little bit, how God takes you on this amazing journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So she, you know, has sort of an epiphany there. It's actually several weeks before she attempts to pray for the first time. And what was really interesting about her story, and there's a bunch of interesting stuff about her story, is that in teaching them philosophy from a Marxist perspective, you got the pagans, right, the pre-Christian philosophers, and then it skipped kind of all the way ahead to like Nietzsche and the rest, right? This whole massive chunk of philosophers that were left out of the picture. And the biggest contributors to the field of philosophy in that era are folks like Augustine and Thomas Aquinas and Anselm of Canterbury and all these major Christian figures. So once her philosophy professor, atheist, told her she needed to seek truth, she started saying, well, who all do I need to be studying? Right? Mm-hmm. And that was a big, big part of her journey.
Okay, so how long has she been Catholic now?
I want to say about, it's been a little while. I want to say at least maybe 20 years. Mm. But it took a little while after those initial awakenings to kind of realize that this was going to end her up in the Catholic Church. There's some interesting stuff in her story regarding September 11th and what she was doing for the State Department during that era as well. She actually was studying, so weirdly enough, Thomas Aquinas is studying a lot of Arabic philosophers, and so she was trying to study not only Aquinas but also learn Arabic to figure out, you know, some of the people that he was reading. And she got a doctorate in this, and in, you know, December of 2000, she thought, well, I'll never use this for any kind of actual career. And then, of course, 9 months later, 9/11 happens. And that particular kind of formation became extremely important for her to be able to, you know, to kind of translate things and to, you know, to work in kind of figuring a whole bunch of stuff out that was going on in that kind of era. So she's got a sort of a two-phase conversion experience, both from her time under the fall of communism in East Germany and in 9/11 with that whole world of kind of, you know, the Islamic terror. So kind of like the two biggest fronts that the battle has been on nationally for us as Americans. She has some interesting experience and some spiritual angles on both of those fronts.
Boy, it sounds like they're making a great book. Has she written a book? Is she thinking about it?
Well, actually, weirdly enough, she's not working on a book about that. She's working on a book translating a German phenomenologist nun's exploration of the philosophy that formed Edith Stein. So, no, she's too busy writing stuff that's like 10 miles over your or my head.
Yeah, but she's got to write a testimony book.
Oh, you would love her. Journey. She is a kick. Jennifer's amazing.
Have you encouraged her to think about writing her own story?
Oh, of course. I mean, I tried to get her on The Journey Home. Everybody who's worth getting on The Journey Home ought to be having
everybody that's on your show should have written a book about their testimony.
Yeah, I know. When's your movie coming out, Teresa?
Well, I have a book. It was a long time ago, but I have several books on it.
Yeah, your movie's about Francis of Assisi, so...
Yes, the next one is, yeah. But I think it's important whenever we write or speak even if we're not speaking, for example, on our testimony per se, but to kind of weave it in a little bit, because people always wonder, well, what the heck are you doing here? How'd you get here? So this just sounds so fascinating. Plus, I love Edith Stein. I'd love to know more about the work she's doing. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, of course.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you meet a person like Jennifer, you think, well, here's the really interesting hook to their story. And then they sit down and you realize there's about 50 hooks.
50 hooks, yeah.
You know, and that's really what I hope people will come away from her story, is that here's like a really intelligent woman. And she went all over the world trying to figure out what God wanted to do with her. And she's still in some ways figuring it out, right? She's never quit pursuing knowledge and truth. And I think that's a great thing to remind ourselves to never stop challenging ourselves to go deeper and figure out, you know, where the threads are leading.
Well, what's so powerful about being Catholic is you could do this for 10 lifetimes and you're still never going to even, you know, get what a foot into, like, because it's so incredible. There's so much to learn and so much to grow from. And even with the saints, I mean, Dominic and I were going on our walk this morning and he was talking about Elizabeth of Hungary. I didn't know she died so young, and all that she did by the time she, what was she, 24 when she passed away?
Yeah, I love that her feast, by the way, happens like right before Thanksgiving in the United States, when we're all kind of doing food drives and food pantry stuff and collecting gift cards for needy families. I think her, I mean, you talk about another person who would be an amazing journey home story. But I mean, Elizabeth of Hungary was born a rich kid. And annoyed all the people around her by giving all her stuff away, know, so there are no.
And by the time
stories.
She was 24, what did she? She founded a home for the poor and an orphanage or a hospital. I forget hospital. And I think, and she was only 24 years old when she did all that stuff.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, we were just talking about Edith Stein. Edith Stein wasn't that old either.
No. All right. So in terms of your guest tonight, I mean, what else is she doing in terms of work in the Catholic world? I know you said she's working on this one book, but is she doing anything else? Is she speaking? Tell us
more
about her.
She's out doing a bunch of stuff. She's, you know, keyed in on philosophy and theology. The body is a big part of, you know, kind of her formation as well. She spoke up at Steubenville this summer. She goes around and about and does some stuff. I actually found out about her for the first time when she was on EWTN News Nightly and doing a segment on her experience as an interrogator at Guantanamo Bay.
Wow.
So
that's how
I found out about Jennifer. And then sort of learning about how that experience formed her and what it means to pursue truth.
This is a making not only of a book, but of a movie.
I know, I'm telling you.
I mean, what a great, seriously.
You have no idea how much stuff I'm leaving out, Teresa.
Oh, that's why we have to watch. That's good, though, because we don't want people to not tune in tonight, right?
Yeah, I mean, they got to tune in. And she also tells it way better than I tell it, too. So,
all right, so give us her name again in case people are just listening. I know folks know your voice. They hear you every single morning. We're talking with Matt Swaim from the Sunrise Morning Show, who is also with the Journey Home program, which airs Mondays, which is why we have him on. For Journey Home Highlights, and a fascinating segment tonight. The name again of your wonderful guest?
Yeah, Jennifer Bryson. Tune in 8 p.m. Eastern, EWTN Television, and broadcast simulcast on most of these EWTN radio affiliates at 8 p.m. tonight, Eastern.
And sounds like she's really, really, really smart.
Oh, and she's funny, too. Yeah, you'll love her.
Good.
Love
I can't wait. All right, my dear. Will you go and have a great week and look forward to talking to you twice next Monday, a week from today, and we'll be, oh my gosh, I can't
believe. It'll be Thanksgiving week, Teresa.
I know. Can you believe it? I don't even know where the time went. It sounds like such a broken record. I know people don't say that anymore, but that's how old I am. But then we'll be in Advent, just about, and then, of course, the Christmas season.
Hey.
So fast. Enjoy every single day. Great job. Looking forward to the guest tonight. Always look forward to Matt Swaim on the Sunrise Morning Show on EWTN Radio. We'll be right back. To know about stories like this so we can stand up for life. Not that you're not doing that already, but just to understand how important it is and to really appreciate the church teaching on these issues. Kimberly Bird is a senior specialist for communications and affairs at Live Action, and we're talking about this gruesome story, and I'm so glad they're covering it, as hard as it is to hear IVF embryos being made into keepsake jewelry. Kimberly, appreciate the great work that you and Lila do at Live Action. So amazing. This story is just beyond. It sounds like something out of some freaky horror film. Thanks for joining us. Tell us about it.
Thank you so much for having me, Teresa. It's an honor to work with Lila Rose in Live Action. But these are the times where it is hard to do this work, right? This pro-life work. It is so very important to continue to educate ourselves on these issues, especially when we see something like this. So this is an organization that is really preying on families that have struggled with infertility, that have gone through the IVF process, which, you know, we can talk about for a minute too, you know, is not pro-life. It is not the pro-life position. But then they're taking the opportunity to tell them that, you know, if you don't want to store your embryos anymore, you don't want to donate your embryos, then you honor them by turning them into jewelry. It's absolutely
just
disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned before, on their website, they are walking through the process on how to connect their fertility clinic with, you know, with this jewelry company. And it's just unfathomable to think that this would be a way to honor a human life, a unique, beautiful human life that was created at the moment of conception in the image of God. And it's very sad and have a respect for life.
Do we know how many companies are involved in this type of, you know, so-called products? I mean, how many people are producing this type of jewelry?
So, you know, we did do a story on this company. Live Action News did a story on this company. They also had done a story on another company in a different country. So I know of at least two, but I'm sure, you know, who knows? There probably could be many more out there. I think the important thing, though, to understand, especially as Catholics, as pro-life advocates, again, is that IVF is just, it's not the pro-life position, especially because we are losing more children to IVF every year than abortion. Mm-hmm. It's a massive issue, and people are so very confused on this issue. People who have the right intentions, but you know, there are over a million embryos that are frozen in America today, and those are each, again, a human, unique human life from the moment of conception, and it's very sad to think about.
And isn't it, and by the way, we're talking with Kimberly Bird, Senior Specialist for Communications and Affairs at Live Action, isn't it to the point now where there's so many lawsuits? This really is a wild, wild west. And I'm not just talking about this craziness with the embryos being made into keepsake jewelry, which is horrific and such a denigration to the human person, the dignity of the human person. But this whole idea that, oh, it's such a great option for couples who are infertile, and isn't this wonderful that they have this opportunity? But people need to understand this craziness, for example, with this jewelry. This is just one of the reasons why the church is so strong about being against IVF, because of the way it disrespects the human person in so many levels.
There are so many different levels, as you said. There's now a new moral dilemma that's taking IVF to another level, embryo screening, right? Where they're sifting through, deciding which embryos are worthy of implantation, screening for different conditions, and labeling certain embryos as less valuable than others. It's playing God in a way that it should never happen. And it just, again, shows the disregard for human life. And we say this a lot at Live Action, but you know, an individual, when they are created by God at conception, they are irreplaceable. They will never to exist and will never exist again, right? And to say that someone is, you know, each, you know, individual maybe isn't good enough to be implanted, or their embryo isn't strong enough, or, you know, now we're even seeing, oh, I wanted a girl versus a boy. It is a complete, as you said, degradation of the human person.
So what's happening, with these companies? Are they getting any pushback from this, Kimberly?
So, great question. This particular company, the jewelry company.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, I did look into their website and their social media, and they continue to, I think, monitor the comments. They have had several comments on their social media that are speaking out against this, and I believe that they delete them or move them, and they ask for respect, and they even put on their website that they have a deep respect for life.
How's that working for them? They are so incredibly
confused. So I think we have to put pressure on them and organizations like this, and even, as I mentioned, the embryo screening, we have to continue to put pressure on them and educate them on what they're doing and just the evil that really is behind this.
Yeah, they think they may have good intentions, but how much of this is associated with money? I mean, it already costs so much money for IVF. How much are they charging for the so-called jewelry? Do you know?
Anywhere from $300 to $500 to custom pieces. And you know what's really interesting is they're not just doing this jewelry for with embryos. They're doing other things as well with ashes and.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to me, it is just so surprising that they don't understand what they're doing, the sacredness of the human person that was created by God, to then, you know, minimize it to a piece of jewelry that someone can just hold on to. And I just say it, as you mentioned, is not the way that God, you know, created. As we even look at the Catechism, the Catholic Church, you know, separating procreation from the marital act with IVF, reducing the embryo to an object, you know, and then obviously the destruction of an embryo, right? So what we understand when it comes to IVF, Teresa, is that it takes 9 embryos for 1 human life, and so essentially, you are putting 9 embryos at a disadvantage, if you will, destroying 9 to get 1. And although we always, you know, respect every human life that, you know, comes into existence, we have to look at the 9 that are either frozen or destroyed in order to create 1 human life. So, I mean, there's just so many reasons to educate yourself on this. And even our own, you know, administration here, we have to continue to educate them.
Yeah, I want to know who's talking to Trump and his people, because, you know, his press secretary is an uber Catholic and she's extremely pro-life. I mean, she gets all the teachings. You know, you've got Rubio as the Secretary of State. You've got so many really solid Catholics who are truly pro-life on his staff, but somebody is giving his team some bad advice about this.
I would absolutely agree. We even sent Trump a memo, Live Action, sent Trump a memo educating the administration on the practice of IVF. We actually work with several doctors who are former fertility doctors who left the practice because they finally and truly understood what they were doing, and they advocate against it now as true pro-life activists. So we did send them a memo several times. We also have put out press releases.
Kimberly, hang on. We have to take a break. I don't want you to get it cut off. More with Kimberly from Live Action when we come back on a Monday. You know, CNA, Catholic News Agency, just did an excellent report just a few weeks ago, actually about a month ago, explaining what the church is teaching is on IVF, which is what we're talking about today. And this is in relationship to what we were discussing, obviously, with Kimberly before the break. On Thursday evening, this was dated October 17th, President Donald Trump announced new efforts to expand access to IVF. Okay? The idea to slash the cost of fertility drugs, as well as issuing guidance to employers to offer fertility benefits directly to employees similar to vision or dental coverage, and not mandating any employers to participate. And then they go on to explain what IVF is in this excellent article, and then they give us the catechism, which is so important because, as Kimberly said, many Catholics are not understanding why the church teaches, and they get mad because they think, oh, well, the church is hypocritical. She says she's so pro-life, and then she tells couples who really want a child and really want a family that they can't do IVF. Well, you need to go to the Catechism of the Catholic Church and think about the stories we're talking about today. This is why the church is telling us this, because you can't play with life. This is like the wild, wild west, and we're seeing examples of that. So one of the paragraphs is 2377 to look at, stating that IVF is morally unacceptable As Kimberly said, because it separates the Marriage Act from procreation and establishes a domination of technology, domination of technology over human life. That's the general explanation. But once you start doing that, right, Kimberly, all kinds of crazy things, including what we're talking about this morning, as in right. jewelry with embryos, discarded embryos, starts happening, right?
It is. It's just atrocious when you think about someone taking a human life that they've created and they freeze it, right? It's storing it for however long. And then to just discard it, discard a child, your child, and then turn it into jewelry. I mean, it's unbelievable. But then we said, you know, again, there are other things that are happening too, embryo screening, and so on. And just starting to pick and choose which human life, is better than the other, if you will. But we were talking about the administration and just the mm-hmm. importance of understanding what really happens during IVF. Again, I mentioned this earlier, IVF is so dangerous, it destroys more human children every year than abortion. As a pro-life advocate, we are always grateful to see, you know, any pro-life advocacy from the president and the administration. But encouraging IVF really means more children will be created and destroyed in this country. And with 1 million embryos frozen in America today, there's no reason for the administration to be pressuring or incentivizing employers to offer IVF coverage, just like they would offer dental care or vision care. Right. It just normalizes a practice that creates and destroys human embryos rather than valuing human life from the moment of conception. So we are urging the administration to reverse.
You said Lila met with the president before the election?
She did. She had a really amazing opportunity to sit down with him and really share live action advocacy for the pro-life or for our children and was able to show several videos to President Trump. Some of the videos that we have on our website that show life developing in the womb, that show the beauty of the human person developing in the womb from the moment of conception, but also sharing videos that show the brutality of the abortion procedure and understanding the child that is really terribly destroyed during the abortion procedure. And it's important. Education is so important, whether we're educating someone as incredible as, you know, President Trump or, you know, so high up with so much, opportunity, but also educating ourselves so that we can speak about this issue with passion, but also with the knowledge, knowing that we're speaking the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And this story, too, is so important for you to cover. Are you continuing to cover it? Will there be more follow-up on this, Kimberly, on your website?
Yes, absolutely. IVF is an issue that we, again, need to continue to educate on. We also want to, really feel and pray for these couples that are struggling with infertility and encourage them to look elsewhere than IVF, right? To encourage them to look at something called restorative reproductive medicine. There are mm-hmm. many doctors out there that have a life-affirming approach.
Dr. Hilgers is amazing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. To address these infertility issues and heal the body, find the root cause for the challenges, and have these couples walk through that journey rather than the IVF journey that again, will create more children and destroy more children in the process.
Yeah. And I also think that, Kimberly, as Catholics, we have to take it upon ourselves to understand, whether it's this life issue or another life issue or teachings and all the teachings in general, why does the church say what she says about these things? And to go to a website like yours or to look at experts such as, for example, Father Tadpole Holcheck has done an amazing amount of research mm-hmm. on IVF and gives extensive talks and has written many articles on this. But there is a reason behind what the church teaches. Benedict XVI used to say, God is not a series of no's, but a series of yes to love and life. When he says no, there's a reason for it, and usually more than one reason, because things can happen. And this is just an example, right?
Absolutely. And it is so important for us to educate ourselves on our faith so that, we can talk about it with strength and knowledge. So I encourage everyone to continue to go back to the church, because you're right, we have an answer. When you have a question, there is an answer, and there's a reason behind many of these issues. And as I've dug, you know, deeper into the pro-life movement, I can't tell you how much closer it's gotten me into my faith. And, you know, the spiritual battles that happen when you work in the pro-life movement, they're challenging. And so we at Live Action, you know, encourage each other to go to daily mass, you know, to receive the sacraments and to continue to just armor ourselves with our faith so that we can continue this journey. And the
pro-life advocacy. You're doing is so important, though, Kimberly. Don't ever give up. Lila's amazing. She's such a witness. I know she's a convert to Catholicism. I met her. First time I met her was years ago. I did an interview with her at the March for Life, and she was just coming into the church, and she was just so incredibly just impressive in terms of her work and how she started so young. But you too as well, so articulate, and we're so grateful for you. Where do we find out information about all these great stories you're working on?
So we have Live Action News. You can find us on various social media outlets as well as going to liveaction.org. So just straight liveaction.org. And you're able to find not only our news stories, we have an incredible news team puts out 6 or 7 articles a day on all life and culture issues, but also we have tons of video content to be able to educate yourself and learn more about the pro-life movement.
And you do a great job. Thank you so much, Kimberly Bird, Senior Specialist for Communications and Affairs at Live Action. Right now, though, we have to move along to our Scripture verse of the week with our dear sister Gail Buckley Barringer. So, Gail, this verse is very interesting. I read it and I was like, wow, this is pretty strong for a Monday morning. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning. Yes, it's different, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, this today it's from Proverbs. Yeah, Proverbs has a lot of kind of strange verses sometimes, but this one is from Proverbs 26:11. It says, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly.
Wow.
You know, I know. You know, there's some verses in the Bible that make us smile or laugh. In this case, I think maybe cringe. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Not exactly a verse you would embroider on your pillow, right? but this one of, you know, the Holy Spirit included it on purpose, I'm sure, because it names something that we all do. Yeah, something that I think every one of us struggles with, returning to old sins, you know, old habits, mm-hmm. old patterns. And the Lord said very bluntly, stop going back to what made you sick. You know, right. we might cringe at the image of a dog returning to its vomit, but the truth is sobering. It's how often does God set us free from something? You know, bitterness, gossip, anger, fear, whatever. And we continue to circle back to it. You know, I think about the Israelites. You know, God delivered them from slavery, from Egypt, from a cruel life of bricks and beatings. And yet when they were in the wilderness with Moses, they kept complaining. They wanted to go back. And they said things like, you know, we had cucumbers and melons there. You know, they remembered the vegetables and all, but they forgot, you know, the chains that were, you know, enslaved them. And we do the same thing. We forget the chains. I think the question of why, you know, why do we return to what hurts us?
I think sometimes, don't you think, and you're an expert on scripture, but the devil that we know is better than the devil we don't know. It's maybe fear, and we don't want to move forward, right?
Right. And it's because, you know, the familiar, it feels safe. Right. Safer than the unknown. You know, even the if it's unhealthy, I think it's. But it's, and even if it steals our joy, but sin becomes comfortable. You know, habits become automatic, and patterns become easy, I guess. And so, this verse, I think, it's meant to wake us up. God wants us, you know, to see the ugliness of returning to the same thing over and over. And we're not supposed not. You know, to make us feel shameful or anything, but so we feel the urgency to stop repeating cycles that destroy our peace. And the good news is, I think God never, you know, He never shows us our sins without offering us a way out.
Right.
You know, Scripture says in John, I think it's John 8, I'm not sure, but anyway, it says that the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed.
Indeed.
And so God's desire is for us to be free from sin. You know, lasting freedom. You know, we So we know, you know, how do we break those cycles? I think, you know, the first thing we have to do is recognize our patterns. We can't repent what we won't acknowledge. You know, we have to acknowledge what sins we have, and we have to pray, and we have to ask for his help and go to confession. And we can't skip confession if we have the same thing to repeat over and over. I mean, sometimes I hate to go to confession. I'm like, oh, no, I got to say same thing over and over. You know, priest is going to say, oh, my gosh, does she ever stop doing this? You know, but... we don't give up the struggle, to break bad habits. Another thing we can do is to replace the bad habit, not with another bad habit, of course, but replace it with something good. You know, scripture tells us that if you empty something, you have to fill it. And, mm-hmm. Because the devil loves an empty thing, and he likes to fill it with bad things. So to replace it with something good. So remember, that sin, what the sin cost you. The dog returns to its vomit because it forgets how sick it was. We can't forget the consequences of our old life. We can't, mm-hmm. It's not to shame us again, but to strengthen our will. You know, we have to say, the insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Yeah. We've heard that expression. So we need to ask God for the grace of disgust. You know, that sounds crazy, but the saints throughout history prayed for this. They prayed that the things that once tempted them would become, disgusting, distasteful. And God can literally rewire our desires. He wants to help us. He wants us to come to him in prayer. And he loves us so much, he wants to help us. So we need to go to him to help for help.
And we need I think this verse is really, as harsh as it is, I think it's excellent because the analogy in your mind, what you start thinking about, really kind of it grosses you out, and it really makes you think. And I think it's God being just a good father and just giving us a dose of common sense, maybe a little Jersey Italian style, like my mom. But I think it's
like Rosie would say.
Well, listen, my dear, we're out of time. Appreciate this, and then I think it's a very good reminder as we get closer to Advent, because it's a time of anticipation and hope and waiting, and a good time to clean things up. Of course, every day is a new day. Give us your website before we take a break, real quick.
Yes, it's cssprogram.net.
All right, my dear. We'll talk to you next week. Our very own Gail Buckley on a Monday. Stay tuned. Almost 55 minutes past the hour on a Monday, November 17th. Great to be with you. Hope you enjoyed the first hour. I enjoyed talking with all of our guests, including our very own Matt Swaim, and of course, Kimberly Bird from Live Action, and then Gail Buckley on that very poignant and very strong scripture verse, reminding us to get rid of those old habits that cause us to sin. A very visual verse indeed, but something to think about, especially as we mentioned, as we're so close to the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and of course, a beautiful time of Advent. Coming up on the second hour of the show, in 2 cents, I want to go to this beautiful article that was reprinted on the Catholic News Agency website this morning. I discussed it on the Sunrise Morning Show on my Monday morning segments that I do with Matt and Annie. And this is a beautiful story all about how sacred music is so beneficial physically, psychologically, spiritually. This researcher in Canada has done many talks on it, and she's even been featured in a number of Catholic publications across the border, and they reprinted the original story this morning. And it brought to mind an experience that I had yesterday at Mass, and I'll tell you about that in the second hour of the program coming up on EWTN's Radio Extra. And then also a very special interview you don't want to miss. The one, the only, Jason Everett is joining us. He's back with us. He's been on this program many times. He is all about, of course, theology of the body and chastity, and he's doing a discussion, a talk, even featured recently, or he will be featured, I should say, taped with Jim and Joy, of course, on At Home with Jim and Joy Pinto, all about John Paul II's Meditations on Human Love. Beautiful. Can't get enough of that. More Catholic Connection coming your way on a Monday. Stay tuned. We'll be on EWTN's Radio Extra channel in just about 3 minutes.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Monday. Hope your Monday is going well. If you're just tuning into this hour of Catholic Connection on Radio Extra, welcome. If you've been with us for the first hour, welcome back. It is a Monday morning, as we said, November 17, 2025. Great to be with you on a Monday and every day here on EWTN's Catholic Connection program. Coming up after the break, our 2 Cents segment. I'll be sharing with you a very powerful experience I had in Mass yesterday related to music, and I don't believe in coincidences. And so this morning when I was getting up and getting ready to prepare for the show, always checking out our wonderful news outlets, including Catholic News Agency, came across a story that was reprinted on the CNA website, CatholicNewsAgency.com, from Canada, our brothers and sisters across the border, a beautiful story about a researcher who's talking about the positive effects, physical, emotional, spiritual, of listening to sacred music. Now, listening to music is very good for us. It does a lot for us. But in particular, sacred music. And I thought, wow, I had just had this experience yesterday, and it's like God was not like he was affirming what was on my heart as I listened to this incredible vocalist at this Mass we went to yesterday. I'll tell you a little bit more about it. Of course, coming up in our 2 Cents segment. I'm very excited to have 2 segments with Jason Evert. We're going to be talking about a number of things, about a conference that he's giving, about his appearance on Jim and Joy at Home with Jim and Joy Pinto, of course, on EWTN. Also, some talks he's giving on St. John Paul II's Meditations on Human Love. He's written several books, of course. He's an amazing speaker. He does all kinds of chastity retreats, and we're so honored to have him here with us this morning. So that is our program for the second hour of Catholic Connection on Radio Extra. Our 2 Cents segment on what sacred music can do for you. And then Jason Evert joins us to talk about the beauty of the church teaching on so many things, especially human love. Now, weather-wise, let's take a look. There are still some problems for California, and if you can believe it, they're going to have more problems. We have another round of heavy rain and mountain snow coming in California, and then also parts of the Great Lakes in the Northeast will be affected by snow as well. So here's a look at the forecast. We have another round of heavy rainfall with renewed concerns for additional flash flooding and landslides. This is in Southern California, and this is also going to occur around burn scars and coastal mountain ranges. And then we have a low pressure system that's bringing enhanced snowfall downwind from the lower Great Lakes into the Northeast mountain ranges. Above average temperatures will challenge or break daily record high temps across the southern plains as well. So mixture of a little bit of everything, snow, rain, and then warmer temperatures in parts of the country. 3 minutes past the hour now. I do hope that your day is going well on this Monday, marking the memorial of Elizabeth of Hungary. Pray for us. Let's get started with the news on EWTN Radio Extra. Well, we mentioned the weather in California. There's a powerful storm system that is linked to at least 2 deaths. The intense weather brought heavy rain over the weekend on Saturday, causing concerns of flooding and mudslides. Santa Barbara County was hit with over 8 inches of rain. And in Central California, a man was found dead along the beach after being swept out by sea by huge waves whipped up by the storm. And near Sacramento, a 71-year-old died after his vehicle was swept away by floodwaters. And again, we're watching that weather story for you on the West Coast. In other news, Pope Leo XIV had lunch on Sunday with more than 1,300 people experiencing poverty and social exclusion. They gathered with him in Vatican's Paul VI Hall for a festive meal marking the World Day of the Poor. The hall was transformed into a beautiful, vast dining room for the occasion. The event, organized by the Congregation of the Mission on behalf of Vincentian missionaries worldwide. This year, they celebrated the 400th anniversary of the founding of their congregation and of the Daughters of Charity. And the Vatican's Apostolic Palace filled with actors, actresses, filmmakers, and scriptwriters on Saturday morning as the Pope met with members of the world of cinema. Nearly 130 years after the first movie premiered in Paris in 1895, the Pope highlighting the ongoing importance of film. Moving from impressing audiences, he says, with visual effects, cinema becomes an expression now of the desire to contemplate and understand life, to recount its greatness and fragility, and to portray the longing for infinity. He also affirmed the film industry's cultural and societal value and the importance of safeguarding both. And American actress Leslie Mann, she says she chose to follow the Pope's call to look to the future with a sense of optimism.
It was incredible. I don't know what he said exactly because he was speaking Italian, but we have it written down in English, so we'll go home and read it. But it was very, we're very hopeful and very excited for the future of cinema.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Also, I mean, the world of cinema is obviously very important for people's lives.
Yes.
How do you feel as an actress?
Well, we're trying to get people back in theaters and, you know, to experience movies together instead of at home on the lazy boy.
Publio also expressing his gratitude for what cinema represents. He said a popular art in the noblest sense intended for and accessible to all. More than just entertainment, films, he says, offering a narrative into people's spiritual journeys. This, he argued, is cinema's greatest contribution to humanity, helping audiences consider their own lives, to look at the complexity of their experiences with new eyes and examine the world as it is for the first time. The FAA is ending a flight reduction emergency order today, now that the government shutdown is over. A reduction in flights at 40 major airports nationwide began more than a week ago, meant to address fatigue and staffing issues among air traffic controllers. The decision to resume operations as normal made following an FAA review of safety trends and due to the steady decline of staffing trigger events in air traffic control facilities, according to a news release. Acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey Alina Haba saying she's feeling better after the arrest of the suspect who destroyed property in her office earlier last week.
This individual obviously got very close to where I sit for work every single day. So it was he got into the building. It was frightening.
She says she's thankful for federal officials, including the FBI and Homeland Security and all the other agencies that really stepped up and captured the guilty party. Keith Michael Lisa charged with possession of a dangerous weapon in a federal facility and damaging federal property. Investigators say Lisa arrived at the federal building in Newark on Wednesday with a bat. Security did not let him in, but authorities say he came back without the bat and got up to Haba's office. And when he couldn't see her, he tore down photos that were on the wall and then he left. FBI Director Kash Patel says the U.S. has taken a major step with the agreement with China to stop shipping the ingredients used to make fentanyl. Speaking on Fox's Sunday Morning Futures, he said he expects to see an immediate impact.
We got the agreement solidified, and it's already in place, and we're going to see immediate results and immediate American lives saved.
The agreement came after President Trump cut tariffs on Chinese goods following a meeting with Chinese leaders where they promised to tackle fentanyl trafficking. Anthropic, the artificial intelligence company behind Claude, says it has uncovered what it believes to be the first ever large-scale cyber attack carried out by AI. Stuart Smith reports a company is blaming the attack on a Chinese state-sponsored group of hackers that use its own tool to infiltrate dozens of global targets.
Anthropic claims in mid-September a hacker group tricked its AI agent into bypassing guardrails by breaking down the hacker's requests into small, seemingly innocent tasks. Ultimately, Claude identified, tested, and exploited vulnerabilities to steal usernames and passwords, extracted large amounts of private data, and categorized it according to intelligence value. They estimate it did all this with minimal human intervention, doing 80 to 90% of the work itself at thousands of tasks per second in what Anthropic says would have been impossible just a year ago. Stuart Smith, London.
Federal employees are returning to work now that the government shutdown is over. The White House reportedly has urged federal agencies to send paychecks as fast as possible to employees who've been without pay.
The Council of Economic Advisors estimates the shutdown cost the U.S. economy about $15 billion a week, causing 60,000 non-federal employees to lose their jobs. States are also scrambling to get SNAP food benefits out to the 42 million Americans who rely on them.
That's Gabe Gutierrez reporting. Meanwhile, as you may have heard earlier, airlines are saying they are ready to shift back to full operations once they do get clearance from the government. Federal immigration agents conducting a major operation in Charlotte, North Carolina, targeting illegal immigrants. The Department of Homeland Security announcing Saturday it launched Operation Charlotte's Web, led by Border Patrol agents. Officials say the crackdown focuses on public safety and removing criminal illegal aliens. The NBA is asking staff members from a number of teams, including the Lakers, to turn in their cell phones and other property as part of a gambling probe. The Athletic reports sources from the league confirm the move. Tammy Trujillo has the latest on that developing story.
It says staffers across the league were contacted after federal prosecutors revealed new details in last month's criminal cases involving alleged illegal betting schemes tied to insider injury information. The NBA has hired an outside law firm to conduct the internal review, which includes requesting documents, phones, and records from select team employees. Investigators are expected to request materials from at least 10 Lakers employees after federal charges were filed against Damon Jones, a former NBA player who worked informally with the team and is an associate of LeBron James. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A new Apple feature allowing users to carry their U.S. passports on their phones. The tech company says digital ID for iPhones and Apple Watches is being rolled out at TSA checkpoints at over 250 airports across the country for use when traveling within the U.S. It adds, however, that digital ID does not replace a physical passport and cannot be used for international travel or for crossing borders. Jim Forbes tells us Senator John Fetterman is back home after spending 3 days in a Pittsburgh hospital for a head injury.
The Pennsylvania Democrat made the announcement on social media Saturday and showed a picture of himself with stitches in his head. Fetterman wrote, quote, 20 stitches later and a full recovery, I'm back home with my wife and kids. A spokesman for Fetterman said the senator fell Thursday while taking a walk outside his home near Pittsburgh, where he had what doctors called, quote, a ventricular fibrillation flare-up, which led him feeling lightheaded and falling to the ground. I'm Jim Forbes.
Target is slashing prices on thousands of food, beverage, and essential items heading into the holiday season. The price reduction started earlier this month and include items such as Kraft mac and cheese, Gerber Kids snacks, and Pillsbury pie crust. The retailer also says its Thanksgiving meal for four is costing less than $20 this year. Among the items included in the meals are Good & Gather premium basted young turkey, up to 10 pounds, Ocean Spray jellied cranberry sauce, stovetop stuffing mix, and favorite day soft French bread. Target said lowering prices will make a difference for families managing tight household budgets during the holidays. And speaking of the holidays, new information from the RV Industry Association says 28 million Americans plan to travel by RV over Thanksgiving and Christmas. Lisa Carson has that story.
For Thanksgiving, over 9 million plan on taking RV travel, and 7 million are expected to hit the road over Christmas. Nearly 4 in 10 leisure travelers say they plan to take an RV trip in the next year. I'm Lisa Carton.
It is a Monday morning. We appreciate your listenership here on EWTN's Radio Extra and EWTN overall. For all the great information about all of our wonderful programming and our news outlets and all the great things we do to keep you connected to your Catholic faith, hence the name of this program, by the way. Of course, overall, you can go to EWTN.com. Coming up, how does sacred music make you feel? Well, if it makes you feel peaceful, comforted, it is all good, and there's some scientific research to back that up. We're going to talk about that when we come back on Catholic Connection on a Monday morning. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Then at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Jason Everett. He's going to talk to us about John Paul II and some beautiful meditative reflections on human love and also what he's been up to lately, a conference that he's doing, and much more. That's coming up this morning still on the second hour of CC with TT on EWTN's Radio Extra. Thanks for listening. Welcome back. It is a Monday. Great to be with you on November 17th. I really want to encourage you to go to CatholicNewsAgency.com and read this article that was reprinted with the permission of one of the Canadian Catholic newspapers. Sacred music is good for the brain as well as the soul, neuroscientist says. So they have a picture of this lovely researcher and neuroscientist. Her name is, it looks like, Catlin Gahn. And the research that she has done is phenomenal. But first, I'm going to tell you why this article struck me when I saw it this morning. It was just one of those things that it's not a coincidence. You know, God is affirming your experience and what's on your heart. I'm sure you've had that happen to you many times. So yesterday, Deacon Dom and I went to Mass. And this is the second time we've done this in the last 2 weeks. We went to Mass at the beautiful church, St. Mary of the Angels, Santa Maria de Angeli, which is below Assisi. So when you come into Assisi, the first thing you're going to see on the right is this huge cupola. There's actually two in this big church. And St. Mary of the Angels is a very important church in the life of St. Francis. It houses the Ponchukula, or the Little Portion Church, one of the churches that he actually rebuilt. It is also the place where he passed away. So there's the chapel where he went to be with the Lord. There's a rose garden where he had that experience of throwing himself into the roses to avoid any type of temptation, and a particular type of rose that actually is growing with no thorns that still exists today. So it's also the headquarters for the Friars Minor when they first began, actually the second spot before they were actually in the first spot, they were in River Torto. And it's a place where he conferred the habit on St. Clare of Assisi. So there's a lot of meaning in this church, St. Mary of the Angels. And so if you go to Assisi, don't miss it. You could see it after or before, but it's quite a large church, and I highly recommend a tour with the Catholic Guide because there's so much to see. So Dom found out, I don't know where we were, I think we were actually giving a tour with our group last month, and he saw a sign on the side of one of the front doors that said English Mass at 11 a.m. on Sundays. So we thought, wow, it'd be great to go to an English Mass. Now, Dom does serve at our little church here in our little village in central Umbria, which is beautiful. He loves it. So we're part of the church community here. But of course, the Masses are in Italian because this is a very Italian area and everybody speaks Italian as their first language. Dom does say a few lines in Italian, of course, the dismissal and the sign of peace. But for the most part, because we're not fluid, hardly, in Italian, we're studying and we're trying to learn, but it's a long process. He can't read the gospel, nor can he preach unless he had a translator there with him, which is just not going to happen. So we do love taking part in Mass at our little church here in our little town. But when we saw the opportunity to go to Mass in English, we thought, well, why not? So we went, and that would be two Sundays ago. So not this past weekend, the first weekend was the weekend before. And it was just amazing. Now, they actually use the local priests who are serving either in Assisi or down in St. Mary of the Angels area. And of course, they're from the Friars Minor. And they're just wonderful, wonderful priests. And so after Mass, two Sundays ago, I went up to the organist and a few of the other people who were hanging out after Mass, and I introduced myself and Deacon Dom, and I told him that we were from the United States and we live part-time in Italy, and just struck up a conversation. And so they said, well, we'd love to have you help us. We need lectors. You know, I don't sing, so I said, I can't sing, but I can lector. I'd love to offer my services. And Dominic said, yeah, and if you need a deacon, I'd love to serve. And so right away, they took us up on our offer, and I lectored yesterday, did the first reading, which was amazing, and Dom served as a deacon at the Mass. But what was so moving, in addition to a great homily that we heard from one of the local priests, the music, which brings us back to the original reason I'm telling you all this, is because the music, the organist is very good. He has a beautiful voice, but there was a guest vocalist yesterday. Her name was Carla. I met her after the Mass, introduced her and her cute little family, and they're staying in Assisi for about 2 months. And her rendition of All Is Well With My Soul, It Is Well With My Soul, just blew me away. And this was at the end of Mass, and we were all sitting there and we're just listening, and she did a duet with the organist, and both of them together, their harmony, everything was so powerful. Plus the music throughout the Mass was beautiful. And I was just sitting there thanking God for the gift of hearing and just being so comforted by this woman's incredible voice and just by the ability to be able to enjoy that music. And then I wake up this morning, no coinkydink, as I said, and there's this great article about how sacred music is really good for you. 1600 years ago, St. Augustine was credited with saying, "He who sings prays twice." Today, scientific research shows that he who sings, performs, or listens to music also enriches and strengthens his brain. And this is according to Catholic neuroscientist Catlin Gahn. Not only that, but sacred music, the article goes on to say, and again, you can find this at CatholicNewsAgency.com, may produce even more beneficial effects. Gahn leads a research laboratory at the University of Toronto and delivered the uplifting news to about 50 people at a talk late last month at St. Francis de Sales in Ontario. In her hour-long presentation, The Neuroscience of Sacred Music, Gahn, who's a former choir director, described how research showing that music can be a part of a healthy lifestyle that helps counter the mental decline that accompanies aging. And listen to this. Music can also help prevent the onset of Alzheimer's disease, which in up to 95% of cases, she said, can be driven by non-genetic factors. including obesity, high blood pressure, smoking, deafness, brain injury, and social isolation. Not only, she says, does music stimulate the brain in special ways, but it also fosters healthy social connections when performed in a group setting. Now, I just told you about the social connections Deacon Dom and I made at the Mass yesterday and the weekend before. So again, so much of this was ringing true with me when I woke up this morning and saw this article. Okay. She originally spoke with a Catholic newspaper in Canada saying music is encoded and integrated by multiple brain regions, stimulating neural pathways that regulate memory, movement, reward, emotion, and empathy. Okay, and people say there's no God. How does that happen? How do our bodies even work? It's just so crazy because God is so incredible. Anyway, I digress. Based on those effects, she says, music can help us keep our minds active and foster social connections, which can in turn help us mitigate the risk of Alzheimer's. Now, she earned her doctorate at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby and did postdoctoral studies at Stanford. She noted the CBC recently reported that doctors in Montreal have partnered with the city's symphony orchestra, listen to this, to prescribe music as medicine. Physicians will get prescriptions that they will give patients. The patient will call us and we will give each patient that calls us two tickets for free. And this is the CEO of the Montreal Symphony Orchestra talking about the free tickets. Even more benefits would conceivably come from listening to or singing sacred music, which Gan defines as any music from chant and classical to jazz and gospel, that contributes to the solemnity and beauty of the Mass, promotes deeper reflection on the scriptural readings and homily, and glorifies God. Wow. So I think it's something to think about, and I was mentioning this on the Sunrise Morning Show on my segment with Matt Swaim this morning. Here we are about to enter Advent, and here we are moving very quickly, right? We are at the middle of in November. I can't believe it. I almost said October, probably a Freudian slip. And pretty soon we are going to be done with the holidays and the holy days. What have we gotten out of it? What will we have gotten out of these beautiful, beautiful times ahead of us? One of the, I think, activities that can really help foster a closer relationship with the Lord and each other, as this article says, in terms of socialization, is to play beautiful music in your home every single day, but especially around these times when people are gathering, people are so busy. Maybe they're dropping by your house for an open house, or maybe you're hosting a dinner. Maybe you're doing Thanksgiving. Maybe you're doing something in addition to Thanksgiving dinner, and it gets a little bit crazy. Having some of your sacred music on in the background while you're doing all the prep work, in addition to while your guests are there when they arrive, could be the antidote, at least for a couple of events, if not long term. It's utterly amazing how we are connected in terms of our bodies and how we process things. And so I think it's a beautiful, beautiful idea to say some prayers and ask the Lord, what type of music should I be playing in terms of what sacred music? What's your favorite? Do you like Matt Maher? Do you like Sarah Hart? Do you like more instrumental? Maybe a Bocelli with the Christmas carols, the Christmas hymns. Keep it on in the background. Play it a lot. It makes a difference, body and soul. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I always appreciate the great work, the ministry of Jason Everett. He has so much to offer us, especially in the areas of our beautiful teachings on life and marriage and family and dating and on and on and on. Jason, great to catch up with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, and hope Kristalina is well also. All right, first out of the gate, I know you've got some really great opportunities for people to bring you to speak and at a particular conference that you're doing, but we haven't talked in a while, and I wanted to get your take on what's happening, I think, in terms of the impact of Charlie Kirk, the positive fallout from that horrible incident where he was obviously assassinated on a Utah campus. One thing in particular struck me when he was, right before he got shot, I think it was about a week before he got shot, he guest hosted a Sunday morning show on Fox News, and his little adorable daughter during the break, one of the breaks, of course, his wife and kids are on set, and she comes running up to him, jumps in his arms, and it was just precious. And then after that, he shared some social media posts telling young men, this is what it's all about. I'm paraphrasing, but get married, have kids, stop living a crazy life. And based on what we're seeing at the various events with him and with Turning Point USA, his message seems to be clicking even more. What are you seeing in terms of that message of family and chastity? And where do you think we go from here? Because I think it was, no pun intended, the turning point for our country.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and if I could pick any turning point, I would think it would be Erica's act of forgiveness at the memorial.
Oh, my gosh.
It was
absolutely.
Just like that her pierced heart was just this fountain of divine mercy of just saying there's a force in the world more powerful than hate, and that's mercy. And so that was, I mean, beautiful for me, and just a real answer to prayer that she was able to respond to, you know, God's grace in the midst of her suffering. But, you know, as you said, I think his passing really galvanized the base. I think there were so many people, both young and old, that were kind of quiet when it came to their faith and their morals, because the understanding was like, hey, if I speak out on this, then I'm transphobic and homophobic and this phobic and that phobic, and I'm a hateful, bigoted person, so I better just stay quiet. And, you know, when he was so outspoken and then this happened, people were just coming out of the woodwork being like, you know, I was never on board with that whole agenda to begin with when it came to this whole woke ideologies and gender theory. And so many people kind of found their voice. It's almost like when Riley Gaines started speaking up of like, no, we shouldn't have men and women's sports. It's surprising how many people were like, yeah, I'm actually in agreement with you, but I was just kind of being quiet because it was socially expedient to do so. I think you're finding a lot of people getting their voices, and then also just the inspiration of that's what it's all about. You know, a wife and kids, not just pursuing pleasure and distractions and Instagram scrolls and likes, how empty and superficial it is to pursue those things. What really matters is family and your legacy. And so I think he did a beautiful job of showing that. And young people, you see young guys in particular flocking back to the Catholic Church. The statistics bear this out. Young adult groups are starting to really bloom nationwide. So it's a real springtime, I think, in the church.
Yeah, and you do so many amazing things. I mean, you've written some 15 books, and you and your wife work together so closely in your great work. You have the Chastity Project. You have the Purified event. We're going to talk about that. You have Toto Tuas Press. Are you finding that more people are going to your website and looking for information on a wholesome and good holy Catholic living?
Oh, I mean, people are starving. For some reason, people think I have a difficult job teaching chastity to high school and college students. Like, I have the easiest job in the world. I mean, it's like walking into an impoverished country handing out filet mignons. It's like, anyone wants some free steak? I mean, they're starving to death, and they know they're hungry, but just because they know what they hope to find and that they're not happy now, it doesn't mean they know how to get to that goal of authentic human love. And so when you come in front of them, I believe it was Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, so that people don't know what they want until you show it to them.
Right.
And I think that's very much true when it comes to chastity. People think they don't want it, then you actually show them what it is, and they're like, yeah, I need that, and I want that.
Yeah. And I think also years and years later, you know, and I'm in my mid-60s, we're seeing the fallout in so many ways of the so-called sexual revolution and what it's done, particularly not only to marriage, but to women as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the empty promises of just, hey, you can just go have it all. You know, take your career, do all these things. There was a Kelsey Ballestrini, I think is the
I was just going to ask. I was just going to bring that up.
Singer.
I can't believe you're reading my mind. Go ahead, tell the story, because I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean, she just came out with this song that's about, like, just sitting in a park by yourself and really questioning, like, wait a minute. You know, I was so busy chasing these goals, and my biological clock was not waiting for me, and now I passed it up, and I thought all these things were more important, and I'm watching these people play with their kids and go down the slides, and I'm just sitting here with my iPhone or whatever. I mean, I haven't heard the song, but apparently it struck a nerve with a lot of people who thought, yeah, you can have it all, and realized, like, yeah, I got my degrees, I've got all these things and all these accolades and accomplishments, but I don't have a husband and kids. And at the end, you know, all my awards or degrees aren't really going to keep me company when I'm 75 years old.
Yeah.
And so a lot of rethinking going on for sure.
Well, I'm going to read you. This is part of a really good op-ed that was on Fox that I saw yesterday. Kelsey Ballerini's new viral song, I Sit in Parks, is haunting. It's not another breakup anthem or empowerment track. It's a confession for something missing, something she only realized she wanted after the world told her not to want it. I sit in parks. It breaks my heart because I see just how far I am from the things that I want. In just a few lines, she captures the ache of a generation of women who were told to chase freedom, ambition, and self-discovery, but never told what to do. Then they found themselves alone, wondering if they ran too far from the very things that would have grounded them. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it reminds me. I saw a clip, I believe it was of Charlie Kirk on this podcast, where he was surrounded by probably a half dozen women, largely in the porn industry and doing all these other things. They have this big debate, and he just posed the question, I'm like, if you could have a career or a husband and children, you can't have both. I know you can have both and theoretically, but let's say you could only have one. You know, what would you have? An extremely successful career where you reach all your goals, or just a husband and kid? What would you rather have? And all of the women said, if I could only pick one, I would pick the family.
Mm. Wow. I think, you know, all of this, and this is what I love about the Catholic faith, is yes, we can obviously, as you do so well, we can, and you draw from both the real world, not saying Catholic isn't the real world, but I'm talking about secular stories. But I think for people who aren't connected to their faith quite yet, or maybe identify as Catholic, to share stories like this huge country star who's singing about the fallout of radical feminism, that is a door that we can use, a channel we can use to bring them to the beautiful teachings of the church, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's not shame or blame or guilt. It's just a mirror being held in front of you for a few moments. And like, where are you at? And are you really happy at the end of the day? And if you take a deep look in that, like when I do the chastity talk, the kids, they'll tell them afterwards, if you guys need to hang out and talk, I'll be here afterwards. I gave that invitation at a high school in New York, and the kids formed a line 7 hours long.
Wow.
And they weren't lining up because I just shamed them and blamed them. It was because I held a mirror in front of their hearts for an hour and said, "What do you like what you're seeing? And if not, is there a better way?" And they're hungry to be challenged. It reminds me of Pope John Paul II when he was a young priest. People said that he was happy and demanding. And it's such a potent combo to present the demands of authentic human love in a way that's demanding, but it's also joyful. People are made for this, and they know when they've been binging on a counterfeit because it doesn't satisfy them.
Yeah. There's another line, and we could talk about this when we come back from the song that the article is based on. Did I miss it? By now, is it a lucid dream? Is it my fault for chasing things a body clock doesn't wait for? And the writer of the op-ed says that line should be carved into the cultural record because it's not just about fertility. It's about time and how unforgiving it is. Our bodies, our hearts, and our souls have rhythms that no ideology can rewrite. Wow. More on this with our friend, a great speaker, author, and chastity teacher, Jason Everett. Everett, I should say. I always say Everett, but it's Everett. And we're talking about our beautiful faith. We'll be back in a minute. Having a great and very important conversation with our good friend here at EW Chan, Jason Everett, founder of TOTUS TUIS Press and Chastity Project. You have so many great things going on. What's the best link, do you think, Jason, if people want more information?
They can just go to our website, which is chastity.com. And there they can connect with us through social media. If they want, they can book assemblies for their church or schools. They can get the resources, books for parents, teens, all kinds of stuff. Everything is just at chastity.com.
All right, so what are you working on now in terms of events coming up, any conferences, retreats we need to know about in the near future?
Well, just got back from Chicago last night. We have an event called Purified we do for parishes in between the high school assemblies. And it's a chastity talk followed by a presentation on the subject of gender. And then we have a time of Eucharistic adoration with the sacrament of reconciliation for the whole family. So we're doing a lot of those around the country. We also have a new ministry called JP2Trails.com where we do wilderness backpacking retreats for Catholic young adults to get them connected. So we've got some real exciting ones coming up in Channel Islands, California, Alaska, Switzerland, Italy, France. So all kinds of fun stuff.
Oh, where are you going in Italy?
To the Dolomites. We're going to be hiking Alpe di Susi, and Cadini di Miserini, and some just majestic peaks out in the Dolomites of Italy.
Yeah, because John Paul II loved that, and so did Benedict XVI to go up to that part of the country. That's wonderful. My husband and I live part-time in Italy. We're in the central part of the country, but the mountains up there are just exquisite. What a great experience. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what's happening in our world. There seems to be, as you said, I think not just seems to be, I think there is a renewed interest in whether people realize it's finding God, but really getting back to the basics. And I also think the other area about which you're so well informed, this whole thing with gender ideology, more and more people coming out and saying that they thought it was nonsense to begin with. But it's interesting, the BBC is being called on the carpet for having trans activists in the newsroom that were suppressing information. And this is in Great Britain, where that study surfaced from that doctor who showed all the issues with those who were doing so-called transitions. There are the whistleblowers also in, of course, Great Britain, who talked about what they thought they were going into to help people and realized that these kids were being literally abused and used. And yet certain outlets like the BBC are claiming that they're not biased. There's no institutional bias. But I think this is being exposed, that there is truth there, and there's plenty of evidence that all these people who claim this is the best thing since sliced bread were very, very wrong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what you just mentioned was just called the CAST study. It's a 388-page mm-hmm. research paper showing that this whole, what's called the Dutch protocol of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, followed by surgery, that approach to treating gender dysphoria was based on very low quality evidence. And now the research is in, like, this is actually harmful. When you put a girl on puberty blockers, she's more likely to self-harm after going on puberty blockers than she was beforehand. After the surgery, within about 8 to 10 years, the suicide rate climbs 19 times higher than the general population. I mean, this is bad medicine. This is contributing to a mental illness instead of actually treating it. And I think the real danger behind this whole gender affirmative approach is it treats the body as a false target of intervention. And mm-hmm. what that means is that you're not giving these individuals real life strategies to live in their bodies. You're basically saying, look, your body's the problem. Your feelings aren't the problem. Your body is the problem. And so once we can augment it surgically or hormonally, then you'll feel at home and everything will be fine. When in reality, typically gender dysphoria is just one point on a constellation of a number of mental health challenges that these individuals are going through. And I remember meeting one girl, her sister was getting the surgery, and she asked her why. And they had been abandoned by their dad as little girls. And the sister said, you'll see, I'll be a better man than dad ever was. Mm. And it's like, whoa, I mean, there's so much hurt often going on. And so you go to websites like Reddit.com, there's communities right. of 50,000 people mm-hmm. who identify as detransitioners, saying, yeah, we went through the procedure, it didn't work, and now we're screaming from the rooftops that this needs to stop.
You wonder, those people, though, would they ever get back to who they were before? Is that possible?
I mean, God can make all things new, but, right. I mean, medically speaking, I mean, some of these procedures are simply irreversible. I right. mean, if a child right. goes from puberty blockers to cross-sex hormones, it sterilizes the kid, for life. And they say, oh, this is reversible, that's reversible. Oh, I mean, if you get a top surgery, that's reversible. No, it's not. I mean, I've got friends who've gone through it, and now if they do want to get married, and if they are able to have children, they'll never be able to breastfeed their own child. And so this is going to come back like a wrecking ball, this pendulum that's swung so far. There's going to be a tsunami of detransitioners. And the change you're going to see is, as they are now, beginning to win these lawsuits, because that's what the hospitals are going to listen to. There's three multi-billion dollar lawsuits in the works right now against right. hospitals fraudulently coding medical procedures to receive Medicaid funding unethically to do these, falsely saying, oh, it's this code when it's that code, multi-billion dollar lawsuits. This stuff is, I think, going to shift it from a pharmaceutical company perspective, because the bottom line is the dollar bill, unfortunately.
Well, I was really glad to see the bishops at their conference in Baltimore reaffirm the Catholic teaching on this and demanding that Catholic hospitals don't have anything to do with this, even though there are some Catholic hospitals. Unfortunately, Catholic News Agency did an investigation and found that there are still hospitals with the name of Catholic, maybe they're Catholic in name only, of course, but doing some of these procedures, whether it be the hormone treatments and the so-called transitioning procedures. They have to crack down on that. The church has to get, I think, here, especially in the United States, a little bit more serious about that. What do you think we can do? What else can we do, do you think, Jason?
Well, it is awesome to have bishops that'll stand up for that. I mean, in Phoenix, we had Bishop Olmsted out here who did take the Catholic name off of a Catholic hospital because they're doing stuff that was against the church teaching. And so we need the shepherds of the church to use the crook, you know, that staff as they should when it's needed. But in the same respect, we have to speak up in the workplace, and we've got to be able, I mean, I think we got to be careful. It's not just a culture war. The young people going through this gender dysphoria are actually casualties of the culture war.
Right.
And so we've got to realize that the church's stance isn't just to debate it or to dismiss it as illogical. No, we have to let these young people know, hey, the church is your home. God sees you, and he knows you didn't choose to feel this disconnect with your body. And he understands you even when you feel like a mystery to yourself. And the church loves you, and it's not a sin to experience gender dysphoria, but the church is not trying to erase your identity. The church is trying to save your identity from being erased by gender theory.
Right. And I think it's so important for us to understand how we can be manipulated. One of my best, I think, I just love him so much, his great teaching over the years. Archbishop, he's retired now, Archbishop Charles Chaput used to always say, we need to know how the media works so they don't work on us. And if you think about the media, like the BBC and this huge scandal that's going on with them now, even though they say there's, you know, oh, we're sorry for doing this or that or the other thing, but there's really no institutional bias. But you think how big the BBC to, let's say, a CNN or another public, well, actually public broadcasting here in the United States, and the messaging they've put out over the years about this issue of gender ideology and how they've been so pro-transitioning. And so how many people were victimized with this information saying it was going to be the answer? I think it's also really incumbent on all of us to help the church get the word out about the truth and where to get really good information from people like you versus going out there in the secular culture.
Oh, yeah. And in the end, their credibility is, I think, going to be shot because the countries are changing their public policies on this. Finland, Norway,
right.
Amsterdam. I mean, talking France is
England.
Delaying the use of
yep.
puberty blockers. All over the place. So look, the research is in, and this is hurting the kids. And so you've got these progressive cultures, including the UK, changing public policies, not because they're transphobic and right-wing religious leaders. No, it's because, look, this is basically the 21st century equivalent of a lobotomy. It was a real bad idea.
And what else can we do, do you think, Jason, to make a difference here in our families? Because I know parents will struggle if someone comes to them, their son or daughter comes to them, and it feels like they're in the wrong body.
Yeah. I mean, if you could sum it up, I think if God could speak to the heart of any of these individuals wrestling with it, he'd say, you know, look, my beloved child, you are not born into the wrong body. You are born into the wrong culture, you know, a culture that's telling you that you have to hurt your body in order to be your authentic self. Your body does not need to be reconstructed. I mean, it's the culture that needs to be reconstructed. And so God's created you for such a time as this to participate with him in the reconstruction of this broken culture. And so the first thing we need to do, if you've got a family member, is not what you say to them, like, this is why gender theory is wrong and your chromosomes are this and not that. No, I want you to give them the ears of Christ and the eyes of Christ. Look at them with love, listen to them, spend time with them, don't treat them like a leper. And if, you know, you can build that rapport with them, then I think they'll care a little bit more of what you have to say. Instead of thinking, God made them an Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Or let's not even go there. Listen to gender dysphoria with a reverent curiosity, because I find it's often a roadmap towards their healing. I mean, a boy came to me and told me he was trans. We started talking. It turned out his parents loved his sisters to death, but he was like the black sheep of the family. And I said to him, like, well, do you think if you were born a girl, you would have been loved the way your sisters are loved? And he said, I know I would have been. And I said, well, this is it. Like, your ache isn't to be a woman, it's to be loved. And by listening to him and helping him to hear the deeper ache in his heart, he was able to realize that this was the issue at stake, not this transgender ideology that he's just been imbibing on social media. So we got to lean in with the ears of Christ and the eyes of Christ.
If you look back, and you've done so much work on the writings and the teachings of the great Saint Pope John Paul II, and his theology of the body, and just his teaching on human love, and I know you're an expert on this topic, but I wonder what he'd be saying right now about all of this that we're seeing. What do you think?
Well, I think he saw it coming through the Holy Spirit, and the teachings he gave us on the theology of the body are so rich of just explaining to us that the body is the only thing God ever created to make a person visible. Because animals have a body, but they're not a personal being. Angels are personal beings, but they don't have a body. But the human body alone makes a person visible. And this is so important because you are your body. It's not something you have like you have a pair of jeans. But if our culture untethers our sexual identity from our bodies, what is it going to attach to? Well, your personality. But there's as many personalities as persons, and you'll end up with an endless spectrum of gender identities. And so the end game of the whole gender thing is to erase the sexual complementarity, the spousal meaning of the body. And so John Paul, I think, kind of knew this was coming down the pipe and taught us again what it meant to be human. So he's challenged us. He said, you're being given a task right now to rediscover the meaning of your bodies. And thanks be to God, he gave us that gift of the theology of body, and our job now is just to unpack it and to live it out.
So if parents are listening right now and they're concerned about this issue, which of your books, resources, what would you say would be great for them in terms of a resource?
Well, we have a book called Male, Female, Other? A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. And we take a deep dive into this whole subject of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. And what do I do if my kid wants him to, you know, refer to him as they, them with non-binary and all that? How do you respond to that? And it's also a book you could share with someone who experiences gender dysphoria. It's written in a very pastorally sensitive way that blends charity with clarity without compromising either one. And so it really gets down to the roots of where did all this stuff come from? Is there a better approach to this? And how do I address and not address my kid or family member who's wrestling with this? Without them just shunning me and banning me and never speaking to me again, you know, how do you kind of build that bridge with them where they can lead them towards the truth, you know, one day at a time with truth and love together? And so it's called Male, Female, Other, and you can get that at chastity.com.
All right, Jason, thank you so much. Great to catch up with you. Jason Everett, founder of Totus Tuus Press and Chastity Project, and again, talking about so many things that are relevant right now and how the church is always relevant. The church teaches what she teaches, not because it's trying to be some mean old ogre squashing our fun, but because it's the best for how we were made in God's image and likeness. Jason, thank you so much. Wishing you and Kristalina and your beautiful family a wonderful Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, and thank you for all that you do to make a difference in the faith.
Oh, God bless you. Thanks so much.
All right, ciao for now. Jason Everett, and again, several different links, and just check them out, chastityproject.com. Also, take a look at Purified and Toto Tuus Press as well. We'll be right back. My goodness, so many stories out there that show the truth of Catholic Church teaching without even quoting church teaching. And we were talking this morning about IVF with our wonderful friends at Live Action, and these companies who think that taking the abandoned embryos from IVF and making them into jewelry is a good idea. And you see why the church talks about things like IVF and why it's wrong. That's just one of the horrible fallouts from going against the teachings of the church and who we are as human beings made in the image and likeness of God. And then, of course, Jason Everett talking about so many things happening in our world, and that story from the country singer and the song that she wrote, basically saying that radical feminism was a big fat lie, and now she's suffering for it. So interesting stuff. And the church is there for us because it is founded by Jesus on the rock, St. Peter. Go to the teachings. Never, ever, ever doubt what the church teaches. The church will never lead you astray. All right, speaking of which, tomorrow, Dr. George Delgado will be joining us. This will be, I'm sure, very, very interesting. We're going to be talking about the abortion pill reversal, A Second Chance at Choice. Now, this is a book that he wrote, and I'm really excited to have him on because, again, this is another lie in terms of this whole idea of choice, as if killing someone is a choice, and as if women who go ahead and have abortions are skipping and dancing and smiling as they walk into an abortion mill. Quite the opposite. So we'll have an in-depth discussion with Dr. George. And then in the second hour, of course, it's Newman Guide News with Kelly Solomon. Lots of big stories to discuss there as well. Have a great Monday. Talk to you tomorrow, God willing, on a Tuesday. Ciao, ciao.